Hey everybody, welcome back to the Brewery Ministries podcast. On this episode, we're going to talk about Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 52. Again, this is the story where Jesus walks on the water. I recently made a YouTube short video on Jesus using God's name in this chapter to identify himself. Now, it's actually obscured in English, but in the original Greek, you can actually see it. And I made that video and it's been surprisingly popular. It's up to about 20,000 views. So I've gotten a load of questions from that video. And I've actually heard a lot of these questions before multiple times, some of them 10 or more times. So I decided what I would do here is I would make a Q&A podcast and try to answer some of these questions and kind of help people think through them, since they're so common and they don't just apply to that chapter. So before I get started, I do have some personal news. My wife and I are actually expecting our first child, which is pretty cool. We're having a baby boy in February, so that's exciting and scary, and I'm a lot more excited. At first I was nervous. I was excited but nervous because I was like, I've been working a lot between my two jobs, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to make it work, but the closer it gets now, like the more excited I get, and I think, oh, I've got to buy him a mini drum set and a mini guitar and all this stuff. So we're starting to get excited, but we still have about 6 months to go. So I've got some time to figure out the other stuff, but looking forward to that. So the story itself, in this story, I've mentioned this on some previous episodes, but I'll just do a short recap here. In this story, Jesus goes out alone because he's been around a lot of people and he wants to withdraw. He needs some time alone and some time to pray and collect himself, because people are basically mugging him all the time. Like they're following him around. They want to be healed. They want different things. They want to talk to him. And he just wants to get away. So he gets away to kind of recharge. Well, his followers went out on the lake on a boat, and a storm comes. So it's really stormy, and they're scared. And Jesus, for some reason, walks out on the water. So this is a supernatural event. I know there are some interpretations where he knew where the stones were and things like that. But if you look at the disciples' reactions here, they're shocked. Like they think something crazy happened, something miraculous. And I've thought about this because I did think, with some of the stuff going on in this chapter, is this a metaphor? And I thought about that a lot, but I think the key here is you actually get to see his friends' reactions to what's happened. And they're like, whoa, I can't believe what I just saw, and that type of thing. And I think when you consistently see that, to me, that's a tell that they think this actually happened. It's not just a metaphor. Because there are other passages in the Bible that are loaded with metaphor, but you don't actually see people's reactions and them commenting on what they saw and how they can't believe it. So I think we're supposed to take this is something that happened, even though it is also layered with imagery, as we'll get into. But Jesus walks out on the water, and when he's out there, the disciples are scared of him because they think he's a ghost, which is actually a really important detail that we'll talk about. But he actually stands there and he says, you know, fear not, I am. Now, I don't know if you recognize where the name I am comes from, but it's actually from Exodus chapter 3, when the burning bush appears to Moses, and God tells Moses his name. When Moses is like, well, you know, you're sending me to Egypt to tell Pharaoh to release the slaves, the Israelites. What should I say? I mean, Pharaoh's going to laugh at me, so by whose authority is he supposed to do this? And that's when God says, I am. And so that's the name that he gives to Moses for himself. And what we see in this chapter in the original Greek is Jesus says, "Fear not, I am," and uses that name as he's standing on the water during the storm. So it's actually like a really epic scene. But in most Bibles, instead of saying, "I am," it says, "Fear not, it is I." And I've always thought that was weird ever since I found this out. It made me wonder, well, is it not really there? Did Jesus not really mean to call himself God? But there are a few translations that put it in there. The Amplified version of the Bible will include it. The CEV kind of includes it. They say, "Fear not, I am Jesus." So they added Jesus' name there. I really don't know why, because that was not in the original Greek. But we'll dive into what the Greek actually says here. So the whole reason I made that video that I put on YouTube, it's a short, and it's called "Jesus' Divinity, a Bible Mistake That Casts Light on His Deity." So that's the short. And the whole reason that I made it was because there are so many people that commonly think Jesus never said that he was God, and that his followers didn't believe that he was God, and that this was something that was added later. And a lot of people who think this, they throw out the book of John, which most clearly shows Jesus using the name "I am." They throw that out because it is the one that was written the latest in history. It was written around 83 AD, and Jesus died somewhere around 32, 33 AD. So skeptical scholars will throw that one out, thinking that it's unreliable because by then they feel like the story must have turned into a legend, because they're not seeing that same claim show up in the earlier Gospels. So I started making some videos to highlight places in the earlier Gospels, in Mark, the earliest Gospel, where it is clear that Jesus was either being depicted as God, or his followers thought he was God, or he said he was God in their language. But it's invisible to us today because he didn't say it in modern language. So that's kind of the reason I made the video, because I've been seeing this claim so much. I mean, I've seen Bible scholars make it, I've seen people I know make it, and now I see it a lot online. So in the video, I suggested that Jesus said, "I am God" here. Now, the first question we'll dive into is, you know, some are not sure if Jesus really meant to identify himself as God. They're not sure if he really meant to say, "I am," or if maybe he just meant to say something like, "I am here." So this is actually a good question. This is kind of a puzzler. And part of the reason they think this is because the two Greek words are actually switched around. They're inverted in Greek. Normally in Greek, when you see the name "I am" in Greek, it's ego eimi. And in this chapter, it's inverted, so it's eimi ego. So I at first looked at that and I was like, well, maybe that's not really God's name here. So before I made the video, I consulted some people who were trained in Greek. I consulted several people. There was a pastor in town who knew Greek, Lynn Perry, and I had a couple friends, Brian, my video guy, his son is trained in Greek, and some other people. And I read some scholarly papers on this, and they all thought that this was a legit use of God's name. So my friends, the way they explained it, because I wanted to know, like, what are the rules of Greek? And what they told me was that Greek is kind of an imprecise language, so it doesn't really matter which way you put it. Like in English, it'd be like taking "I am" and making it "am I," and that would be weird. That would change the meaning. But they're saying in Greek, when you switch the two words around, it actually still means the same thing. Now, I've actually heard a lot of pastors teach on the I am statements before, because there are a lot of other places where Jesus appears to say God's name and identify himself as I am, but they're in these other weird situations. Like he says, I am the true vine. So if something like that comes after I am, I kind of think that doesn't count. So if I said, hey, I am thirsty, you know, I'm not really trying to say I am. That's kind of using that phrase, that name for God, out of context. So Michael Heiser, the theology professor I learned under, he runs Naked Bible Podcast. He has a blog. It's called, it is called The I Am Statements of Jesus, A Slightly Different Approach. So if you look that up by Michael S. Heiser, he's kind of divided out every instance where Jesus used this name, I am, to identify himself that seemed convincing, and then kind of thrown out the ones where he said something else afterwards, like, I am the true vine, that maybe that's not really what he meant. He didn't mean to say that he was divine in those situations. But this example from Mark 6 is on his list of ones that he thinks are compelling statements of Jesus' deity. So I thought that was interesting. But let's say a person isn't convinced that that's really what Jesus meant to say, because some are going to need more information. This is kind of older language, so maybe it seems unclear to us today. We need some kind of tiebreaker to show us that Jesus really did mean to say he was God. So here's something that might help. In the context of that moment, when he's actually standing on the water, this is actually a picture of a god. So I've talked about this on a previous episode, but this information comes from a peer-reviewed article, a peer-reviewed paper from a scholar, and it's called A Ghost on the Water, Understanding an Absurdity in Mark 6, 49 through 50 by Jason Robert Combs. So you can find this paper on JSTOR. It was published in the Society of Biblical Literature, so it is a legit peer-reviewed scholarly article. And in this article, he states that at the time, people believed that only gods could walk on water, like Orion and Zeus. But this idea is in the Old Testament too. Job chapter 9, verse 8 says, only God walks on the waves of the sea. And Psalm 77:19 says, your path is through the sea. So you can see this idea here that God walks on water. And if you're from Rome and Roman mythology, then you still believe that gods walked on the water. And the water itself was a symbol of chaos. So Jesus walking on it, that's a symbol of him having control over the chaos of the universe. It's poetic language in the Old Testament. Like those are not literal statements of God, like physically walking on the water. But here, Jesus knows that, so he's acting it out. He's acting out their metaphor and their poetry to show them through his actions that he is a divine being. So they're struggling with doubt. His followers, they're not sure about all this, which is why when they see him, they're walking on the water. Instead of saying it's a god, they say it's a ghost, which doesn't make any sense because in the paper it says that water is a ghost's kryptonite in their thinking. Like that would kill a ghost. So by them identifying him as a ghost, it's their way of saying this can't be. He can't be a god. He's human. He must be something else because, you know, humans can't do this. So I can't be a god. He must be a ghost. So they're actually going to come around to the idea that Jesus is God, but it is in this story that that happens, and this is the turning point. So you have to see the picture here that Mark is painting when he's writing this story. If a person isn't convinced that Jesus really said, I am here in this story, because the language is kind of unclear, then we can actually see the same thing in the way Jesus is depicted and the actions he takes. Because when he's standing on the water and he says, fear not, it is I, he's both saying that he's divine, but he's acting it out too. So you actually really don't need Jesus to say anything to be able to see that he's being depicted as God here, if you understand how a person thought during this time period. Question number two is, some say Jesus did not call himself by the name I Am because Mark was written in Greek and the burning bush story from Exodus 3, the Old Testament, was written in Hebrew, and these two languages are incompatible. So I've been hearing this a lot lately, like a lot. I probably got 10 comments or more about this, and even people that I know in the church circle. A month ago, I preached at my church, and I noted that Mark was actually quoting from the Greek Old Testament called the Septuagint, and that he would use those quotes to make a point about Jesus. So there's certain things that he said that they don't seem like anything significant, but if you match the words to the quote that he put, whatever he was saying from the Greek Septuagint, you actually figure out that he's using a quote to make a statement about Jesus. But he doesn't quote from the Hebrew Bible. He always quoted from the Septuagint, or almost always. And it seems to be a misnomer that the New Testament writers read and quoted exclusively from the Hebrew Bible, because I think people today see the Greek Septuagint, the Greek Old Testament, as illegitimate. But I mean, and the way I look at it is, if it was good enough for the writers of the New Testament, it's good enough for me. I think people just don't realize that that was their primary Old Testament. So when I go back to Exodus chapter 3 and I see ego eimi there, that Greek word that means I am, God's name, and then Mark puts that in Mark chapter 6, I'm like, oh, okay. Mark's trying to connect people back to Exodus chapter 3. He's trying to tell Greek readers that, hey, back in the Old Testament when God appeared to Moses as the burning bush, well, he's actually trying to link that story and God, the depiction there, to Jesus in this story. So I found a source just to show people that, you know, Mark and the New Testament writers were using the Greek Bible here. It's from Oxford Scholarship Online by Timothy Michael Law. That's another peer-reviewed paper. And in the abstract, he is quoted as saying, "Many studies on the New Testament author's use of the Jewish scriptures have demonstrated conclusively that the writers most often, if not always, used the Septuagint." That's the Greek Old Testament. "Instead of the Hebrew scriptures, in only a few cases is the question still open." So that is very interesting. I know if you're not a language buff or you're not interested in this stuff, you're like, oh, why does this matter? And that is a good question. It is because some of the evidence for Jesus's deity, actually quite a bit of it, comes from quotes Mark used from the Greek Old Testament, not the Hebrew. So if you know how to match up those Old Testament quotes with what Mark is saying, then you can actually see more clearly, oh, okay, he's trying to say Jesus is God here, but he doesn't come right out and say it. He just uses a quote instead. So I've actually started reading the Greek Septuagint myself. You can find English translations, and so I mostly read the English, but I look at the Greek too. I've got like a parallel in Logos Bible software. There's a free version of Logos, so you can get that, and you can click this button, the interlinear button, and you can actually look at them together. And so I've started doing that, and I've noticed that the Septuagint is where Mark specifically quoted from when he wanted to quote the Old Testament. So for example, in Mark chapter 1 verse 2, he quoted a passage from Exodus, and it was Exodus chapter 23 verse 20, but he took it directly from the Greek Old Testament. In English, you actually can't see that he's quoting from Exodus there, unless you look at an English translation of the Septuagint, or look at it in Greek, because I've looked at the Greek to make sure it was actually a match. Which leads me to another question. Another thing people have said is that Jesus couldn't have been trying to say he was God here, or the English Bible translators would have caught it. They would have translated Jesus as saying, "I am," here in this chapter. So I totally know that I'm just like some random guy on the internet here, so I understand it's a big deal for me to say that the translators missed something, but this information, like, I learned this from other scholars, so it's something that they talk about too, but I think the translators are very, very good at their job, and I trust the overall body of their work. I think they did an excellent job, but they are people too. So I think that sometimes other scholars might see something that they missed, and it sort of takes a village, you know, to unpack everything that's there in the text. And I do occasionally find other stuff that they missed by reading multiple Bibles with notes in them, and I'll notice there's some disagreement between the two sometimes. So it's not unusual. It's not as unusual as you would think. So another situation I found like this was that same verse I mentioned earlier, Mark 1 verse 2. The verse says, "Behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way." You might recognize I talked about this on the last two podcasts, so you might want to go back and listen to those if you want to hear in more detail, but I'll kind of skim through it quickly here. If Mark was quoting from Exodus, I would have thought the translators would have made Mark 1, verse 2, that quote, matched the verse he was quoting from Exodus 23:20. But they didn't, and I really don't know why. It seems like they retranslated it. So they used different words in Mark 1, verse 2. So the two verses don't match very well anymore. But if you look at both verses in Greek, they do match. If you compare Mark 1 verse 2 in the Greek to the Greek Old Testament, that Exodus verse, they actually match there. So it's kind of weird. Like, I have several Bibles that have a note, and they say that verse from Mark is actually a quote from a different book. This is where it gets confusing. They'll say Mark is quoting Malachi 3 verse 1, and they're kind of right, sort of. But that verse, Malachi 3:1, is quoting Exodus 23:20. So if you go all the way back to the source, Mark is actually quoting in Mark 1 verse 2, Exodus 23:20. So I think it's weird that the commentators, like the people who write the notes in your Bible, they won't know that Mark is quoting from Exodus, which is a big deal though, because by quoting that verse, Mark is trying to say that the angel of the Lord, this angel that appeared throughout the Old Testament, who was God himself and led the people out of Egypt, he's trying to say that Jesus is the angel. He's trying to link them. But according to the Bible Project, he didn't want to say Jesus was the angel of the Lord because, I mean, his Roman readers, they would have gotten confused. They're not Jewish. They don't have that Jewish background. And they may have thought that Jesus was only an angel and not God himself. So he put the quote there so Jews would catch it, but he didn't spell out that this angel that appeared in the Old Testament that was God is also Jesus, because he didn't want to confuse his non-Jewish readers. So that's the reasoning that Tim Mackey, the scholar at the Bible Project, put out there in his Angel of the Lord video. But when the translators miss that, then when they don't realize where Mark is really quoting from and instead say he's quoting from Malachi, and they don't go back to the original quote in Exodus, then you miss that Mark is trying to say Jesus is God right there in Mark 1 verse 2. And then people start to think that, well, maybe Mark didn't say Jesus is God because, see, all these pieces are invisible to them. So it is a big deal, and I don't know why the translators didn't catch that. They're very good at their jobs, and I'm some idiot with a mic, but they're not perfect. So I think the lesson here is get several study Bibles. Don't just get one and read the notes from one, because there's so much. The Bible's such a thick book, and it's so complicated that you really kind of need the notes from a lot of different scholars so you can see all the different things that people have discovered, because one scholar will miss some of these details and another scholar will catch them. So if you put them all out together and you look at them all, then you can have a wider view and a much richer appreciation of Mark and what he was trying to say about Jesus. Okay, so far we've covered some of the language difficulty with the Greek and what it means and how to understand it. Well, next episode we're going to do a part two to this. Some of the questions I've received are like, well, you know, Jesus didn't speak Greek, he spoke Aramaic, and not very many people could read or write at that time. So did Mark write down and embellish the story and nobody knew because nobody else could read? Maybe when he translated from Aramaic to Greek, he made some mistakes, or he added things to the story to say Jesus was divine, but that's not really what Jesus said because he was speaking Aramaic. So we're going to think through that, because that is a very good question and a big one. And boy, I've gotten that question a lot lately, so I'd like to unpack it a little bit. There's so much information out there, and there's so many doubts and questions on the internet and theories that I don't blame anybody for being confused. I don't blame anybody for what they think, where they're coming from. But I think it would be really good for us all to think through it together, because some of these claims sound really scary and they cause people to doubt. But I think there are some good answers. So we'll go through some of those questions on the next episode. I'd also like to mention that we are releasing some really cool YouTube content right now on our channel at Brewery Ministries. So I've neglected the podcast here a little bit because I've been working hard on video content over there. We do have a detective style investigation series we've been working on the Book of Mark. So if you ever seen a detective movie where they make like an evidence wall and they put all these note cards on the wall and they take string and they try to tie some of the facts and link them together, that's what I'm doing with Jesus's claims of his deity in the Book of Mark. So you can find that and another one I'm working on this week that I hope to release in the next week is on Genesis 1. And that's going to be really interesting and possibly provocative, because a lot of people think that Genesis 1 is telling us the science of how God made the universe and the world. But when I dug into that chapter and what scholars say about it and some of the material from the Dead Sea Scrolls, I actually think it's more of a communication device. There are a lot of different verses that actually are basically a commentary on other creation stories, on stories from the Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Akkadians. They actually sort of repurposed those other stories to make a point about God, as if it was some kind of communication strategy. It's called a polemic. It's a literary technique. But if you've ever heard the claim that the Bible is actually a ripoff of other creation stories, and that the Bible's creation story was plagiarized from other religions, that's actually where that claim comes from. And this video will dive into whether or not that's true. And part of the key there is understanding storytelling culture. For instance, does it matter which creation story was written down first or not? Because maybe in the storytelling era, there are some reasons to think that maybe it doesn't matter which one was written down first. So that could be interesting. And I'll also explain all of the different mythologies that appear in the creation story that the writer was using to make a statement. And one of the things that he's using is other literature about chaos dragons. And if you read Genesis 1, you're going to be like, where do you see dragons in this story? And it's actually in verse 2. So if you want to take a look at it, you can ponder where it might be, and then we'll talk about it on that video on Genesis 1. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm really passionate about Genesis 1. It is such a rich chapter, and there's so much stuff in there that you've probably never heard before, but hopefully I'll kind of show you the tip of the iceberg in this video. All right, guys. Well, if you're in the Wichita area and you want to come hang out with us at the brewery, every Tuesday night we meet at Poorhouse in downtown Wichita. It's right next to the Smoothie King. It's in that same building off of Douglas Street. It's at 7 p.m. every Tuesday night, and beers are on special. Craft beer is $3 for their flagship beers. They're really good. So if you want to stop by and hang out with us, that would be awesome. I'll be back soon with another episode, part 2 of our Q&A on Mark chapter 6. Hit me up if you have questions about this on Facebook or Instagram at Brewery Ministries or at breweryministries@gmail.com. We'll see you soon.